So how are you doing, first of all? Let's start here.
We have been doing pretty well. First of all, Tamara has had a lot of issues. She's been in the hospital, and we just got a clean report on her yesterday. She's back out and back to normal.
Well, that's
So
good.
that's
Tamara, your
good.
wife.
Right. And then we've been in a legislative session, very intense legislative session, to try to get some of the bills that we need here in Georgia for the 2024 election passed.
What kind of reception are you getting these days from the lawmakers at the State House?
Remarkably good. And that's because we have been traveling the state for a couple of years, preaching the issues of the 2020 and 2022 elections and how we need to solve them for 2024. And that has resonated throughout the state. And it has gotten back to the legislators, and then they have consequently jumped on Secretary of State's for not doing anything. And so it's all working in our favor right now. So it's good news. And the other thing, Mike, is we've had a change in the lieutenant governor who controls the Senate as well as the Speaker of the House. Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones has replaced Jeff Duncan, and former House Speaker David Ralston had passed away, and he's been replaced by John Burns. And both of those are new people. The new leaders are pretty receptive to election security issues. So that's worked extremely well in our favor.
Don't you find that it makes a world of difference when people are at least willing to hear what you have to say, right? Because a lot, for the longest time, and you and I talk ad nauseum about this, people will say, well, there was no fraud in the 2020 election, and then there was no evidence of fraud. And then you try to present them with evidence, and they at times have literally run in the other direction. So it's kind of like if you stop and listen, all of a sudden, people like yourself don't appear so fringe anymore, do they?
Well, right. And they know that we've been down there a lot. We provide evidence every time. We, try to treat everybody, at least all the legislators, with respect.
Right.
And I think that, and we keep our comments concise. And I think they have become very, very comfortable with us. So, and we've been very comfortable with the new chairman and the committees and that sort of thing. So, we've got a really good working relationship, and we won't get everything we need, but we've got a, we'll get a, I think we're going to get a quite a fair amount, and then we'll have a come back next year and finish it off. But we have to get enough this year to make sure that we've got this election secure that's coming up.
Yeah, this is going to be, you and I were just talking about how 2024, one way or the other, this election is going to be quite significant. I've been saying all along that how the next couple of years go are going to dictate how the next couple of hundred go. And I'm not trying to sound melodramatic, but I really honestly believe that we are on the precipice. And things are going to get a whole lot better, or they're going to get a whole lot worse. Is that how you see it?
Well, that is exactly how I see it. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that in Brazil lately, from what I've been hearing about. But yes, I mean, I think we've got one chance to save this 2024 election. And if we don't do it, we are appear to be on the road to communism.
And I think that our friends on the other side of this issue also feel the same way. And you guys have a DA down there in Georgia, Fannie Willis, who indicted 19 folks, including President Donald Trump. And it seemed to me right off the bat that it was all about election, ironically, it was all about election interference. Of course, in recent weeks, a lot of impropriety on the part of Fannie Willis has come out. And you guys have done great work uncovering that. And I wanted to have you on because I wanted to have you walk through this presentation that you recently gave there are some times where conversations don't do the work justice. And so I'd love for you to kind of just walk through the presentation and share with the folks just what you found, because I think when folks see it in the layout that you have it presented in, it really kind of hits a little bit differently, and the gravity of the situation really kind of is understood.
Well, thank you, Mike, and I would love to do that. But I have to give the credit to the attorneys of the defendants,
Yes.
and they're the ones that actually did all this research. The only thing that we've added here at Voter GA is we've just put it together and packaged it to where the average listener in a different state could understand the magnitude of what's going on here. So
Right.
that's the only thing we can really take credit for is just the packaging.
Fair enough.
So that said, I'm going to go ahead and see if we can get this ranked up here.
Please. Got it.
And this is based on testimony in large part, but not exclusively, from Ashley Merchant, who was an attorney in this case. Her and her husband, you see down the bottom left corner, we're representing Michael Roman, and we are currently pretty excited about the fact that the Senate Special Committee on Investigations is investigating this whole matter. So, what a lot of what you see are results of her work and her husband's work in regards to this investigation. And as I said before, she is representing Michael Roman. Whoops, I made a mistake there.
That's all right.
Let me back that up. She is representing Michael Roman. How's that?
Yep. Nice.
So Roman is interesting. He was played a part in the Trump administration, not a very significant part, but he was not investigated by this Fannie Willis grand jury. He was actually added to the indictment later. And by either Nathan Wade or Fannie Willis, for reasons that are somewhat bizarre and unexplained, he was charged with these RICO conspiracy acts, and most of these things are just acts of free speech.
Right.
We've talked, I think, maybe about Donald Trump. He tweeted that, hey, you go watch the hearings on OAN, and they
Right.
claim that that's an act of a conspiracy when it's really what it's an act of free speech. Well,
Right.
the same thing happened to Michael Roman. He was charged with receiving an email, or at least that was part of the conspiracy, which is a bit bizarre. How do you control what emails you receive or not? He sent a text asking an elections director to attend a Georgia House hearing. They call that part of a conspiracy, and sending emails about alternative electors. The whole issue of alternative electors is kind of ridiculous. Both Republicans and Democrats pick their electors 6 months in advance of the election. They're alternate electors, and they can continue to be alternate electors as long as there is a pending challenge. And that's what happened in Georgia in 2020. Donald Trump had challenged the election, and that was active all the way through January the 7th, and therefore the electors were certainly valid until that was resolved. And that's the same thing that happened in the John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon race in Hawaii in 1960. That was the same thing that John F. Kennedy did, actually won those electors back from Richard Nixon in a challenge. And it's the same thing that happened in 1876 with Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden, where they had three states under a challenge. Three different states had electors that were challenged. But I think Roman, when all this is said and done, he's going to be a real hero because he was offered a $5,000 fine and a misdemeanor by Nathan Wade, and he refused to take it. He could have walked away by paying $5,000, had a misdemeanor charge, and it'd be the end of it.
He chose
And
to fight.
he chose to fight. And most everything you're seeing today is really because he decided to stand and choose to fight. So I think he'll go down as a real hero when all this is over.
So all these findings were as a result of what, discovery in his case? Is that kind of what happened?
Yes, it's that most of what we're going to see here is discovery from Ashley and John Merchant, who were representing him.
Gotcha.
And so it's almost amazing what they have done, and how this is probably going to result in the disqualification of Fani Willis. It's already resulted in the disqualification of Nathan Wade, and Fani Willis's disqualification is up on appeal.
I bet they regret going after Roman.
Well, I would think so. I certainly would. It was not worth it. So starting off with Fani Willis. So she was elected in November 2020. She took office in January of 2021. And she said she was broke prior to the election in her book, and then still had a $4,600 tax lien on her home in 2022. She was behind in her taxes. And her DA salary is roughly about 200 grand a year. And as most attorneys, her oath requires her only to take normal compensation. So Fulton County prohibits her from taking anything more than $100 from what they call a prohibited source. A prohibited source, in this case, would be an attorney she works with, like Nathan Way. She can't take benefits from him, or really anybody, from that matter, because almost all of those sources are prohibited. And
this is to avoid conflicts of interest, I assume.
Exactly. And that's the bottom line, Mike, because she could be disqualified not for an actual conflict, but for only the appearance of a conflict.
Right.
And that is...
That's enough.
Right. And what you're going to see here is the appearance of a conflict as massive, and then the actual conflicts are also very well substantiated.
Interesting.
So here's how it all got started.
Yeah.
September 15th, 2021, Fani Willis went to the Fulton County Commission and requested 55 new hires to be budgeted. And she asked for an extra $780,000 for 2021 just to finish that out year, that year out, and $5 million extra from 2022 on. And the reason that she asked for this money was to reduce the backlog of 224 unindicted murder cases, as well as other serious crimes. Well, of course, the county commission voted to give her that money because they are obligated to keep Fulton County safe.
That's a noble endeavor.
Hmm?
That's a noble endeavor, right?
Absolutely. Right after that, 6 months later, I'm sorry, 6 weeks later, she hired Nathan Wayne, who the evidence now shows has been her boyfriend since 2019 when they met at a municipal court conference. And she then, when she got her first, for the first $5 million by January 20th, 2022, she wrote a letter to the chief judge of Fulton County, Chris Basher, and requested to open an election case. And this case has incurred massive expenses for Fulton County taxpayers using this novel RICO indictment theory. And what she's done is she's used this to collect more evidence and indict 18 of her political adversaries. And so this is hardly a legitimate investigation in my mind. But she even attempted to indict the lieutenant governor, the sitting lieutenant governor, Burt Jones, after she held a fundraiser for his political opponent. And even Judge McBurney, who's not a friend of anyone in the election integrity world, had to ask her, what were you thinking when you did that?
So she's not shy about her political affiliations.
not shy at all, as anybody who's heard her knows. So she investigates this Trump and Raffensperger phone call, this famous phone call that was in the Washington Post. And this phone call was recorded, according to the evidence. I think there was a Federalist report on this, that it was recorded by the Assistant Secretary of State, Jordan Fuchs, while she was in Florida. She was in Florida for that meeting, which was on, I think it was Saturday, January 2, if I'm not mistaken. And Florida is a two-party call consent state. So she did not have the consent of anybody in the Trump organization to record the call in the first place. And yet she was granted immunity to testify in this case, despite the fact that she appears to have recorded the call illegally. And then we have been collecting evidence for about fraud, errors, and irregularities in the 2020 election. I think so much we have discussed on your show before, Mike. But they withheld all that information from the grand jury. So the grand jury concluded there was no fraud, errors, or irregularities. And essentially, what they did there was withhold exculpatory information and evidence from the grand jury to get them to reach the conclusion they wanted for their political agenda. And it then lacks, I mean, her other issue is jurisdiction. While she claims to have jurisdiction, federal law requires both, I think it's Article 6 as well as the 12th Amendment, grant all the power for resolving electoral disputes solely to the United States Congress. That is, and then state law, on top of that, state law grants all the power to initiate election investigations solely to the Georgia State Election Board. So there is no federal or state authority that is explicit for any county district attorney in the state of Georgia to investigate any election-related matters. So she decides to hire three special prosecutors. I'll tell you about them in a minute. But under Georgia law, OCGA 151820 requires that she get approval, authorization from the governing authority of the county in order to hire a special prosecutor. And that the amount to be paid can either be fixed by a local act or by approval of the county or counties comprising the judicial circuit. She never got approval from the counties to hire or to compensate a special prosecutor.
She just did it unilaterally.
That's right. She did it without any evidence of approval. And she hired Nathan Wade. By the way, she couldn't have hired him as an employee because there are county rules governing relationships of employees and nepotism. But she hired him beginning in November 1st, 6 weeks after she went to that county commission. And then she started with this one-year contract through October 31st. Well, Wade, to my knowledge, has never prosecuted a felony case, but he took over this anti-corruption unit that was being run by a lady named Sonia Allen. And all in all,
So he appears to be less than qualified.
that is the argument that in terms of prosecutorial, if he was a defense attorney, that would be a different story. But in terms of his prosecutorial experience, he has had prosecutorial experience, but only as a solicitor in misdemeanor cases. But he's never prosecuted a felony case.
Gotcha.
So I would say so.
Hmm.
But in regards to the special prosecutors that have been hired, only two other counties have ever hired them, and the other two counties spent about less than $2,000 each, and just on a very, very finite special instance that would not be questioned. By contrast, Nathan Wade was paid over $700,000
Wow.
of our taxpayer money here in Fulton County, which is where I live.
The King's Ransom.
Yeah. And to give an example of the discrepancy, the two main I guess you would consider to be the lead expert and the lead litigator in this case, Anna Cross, and John Floyd, who was the RICO expert, have billed less than $100,000 compared to Wade's $700,000. And these are the two most highly qualified folks on the case.
Do we have
And
any indication what it is about Wade's expertise that commands such a premium?
the only indication I can see is that he's very tight with Bonnie Willis.
It would appear that way.
And ironically, both Anna Cross and John Floyd appear to have left this case. So
Interesting.
neither seem to be active anymore.
Interesting.
Wade was billing at $100 an hour more than Floyd, who is the RICO expert, which is the basis for all the entire prosecution. So his billing, as we learned by the bills, that most lawyers bill in 6 to 10 minute increments,
Right.
but he was billing at a whole day, a block at a time. We call block billing. And I was he would some of the attorneys that were listening to actually testify. I mean, I saw one Democrat attorney who happened to be my representative. She was shaking her head in disbelief when they put this bill up. She
Wow.
could not believe that he was actually billing in these large blocks of money. I think one of them even was had 24 hours in a day, and he billed 24 hours or something to that
Wow.
effect. But his bills were approved by Willis or Dexter Barnes, and none of them were ever reduced. Usually they're itemized and checked and negotiated. Not the case with his bills.
So highly unusual.
Yes, well, that's what the attorneys are saying, and even attorneys who are Democrats.
Gotcha.
So Wade paid, according to the evidence presented, over $17,000 in expenses for travels he took with Fannie Willis to Bahamas and Aruba, Belize, Napa Valley, cruises. And
Wow.
there's no evidence that Fannie Willis ever reimbursed him for that travel. She tried to claim she reimbursed him with cash, but there's no evidence that she withdrew large amounts of cash to repay him. So it appears that this is a benefit from a prohibited source.
Correct.
And Wade was in divorce proceedings with his wife, Joycelyn, and they both testified that Wade and Willis testified their affair started around March of 2022, and they claim their affair ended in the summer of 2023. But the testimony and the text from his law partner and cell phone data records between them show they pretty clearly show that it all started back in 2019. And that was after they met at a judicial conference where Wade was presenting and Fannie Willis was attending.
So 2 years before they say they s it started.
Right. And that's significant because of the issue that they perjured themselves. That is when they perjured themselves in their own testimony, as well as Wade's in his interrogatories, where the judge has already acknowledged that Wade perjured himself in the interrogatories
Gotcha.
over this issue. And so one of the people who testified, who wasn't really willing to testify, but she agreed to, was Robin Yeardy, who is a like a 30-year friend of Willis, and she had was a media liaison down at Fulton County for a while, and she actually rented her condo to Willis, and Willis accepted that for security reasons. She moved out of her house and wanted a different place to live. Yudi was also best friends with Nathan Wade's wife, Joycelyn. So she's friends with both Joycelyn and Fonnie Willis, and she testified that their Wade and Willis affair started back in 2019. She eventually left media relations, and a guy named Jeff DeSantis took over, who some say is a White House plant. And started things off with a $10,000 media monitoring contract for Willis, and that was to keep her image up with a company called Critical Mention. Then along came Terrence Bradley. A lot of folks may have seen his testimony. Bradley was the law partner with Nathan Wade. He and Chris Edwards. Chris Edwards, they split revenues three ways, way most law partners do, and they split them into thirds, and then they eventually dissolved the partnership. But during that time, Wade got them what they call taint contracts, and what a taint contract is just to review evidence of a case and determine what can be released publicly and what has to remain confidential. So Bradley had sent all these amazing texts to Merchant, positively confirming that Wade and Willis has had this affair since they met at this municipal court conference back in 2019. Just adamantly giving lots of details, telling her who else to talk to. And then when he got on the stand, he attempted to falsely claim that his questions regarding Nathan Wade were attorney-client privilege. But after the judge interviewed him in a TV set interview, that just his own private interview, he ruled that he did not have attorney-client privilege for those questions and required him to testify. And then at that time, Bradley basically said that he was only speculating about all those texts. Didn't really mean that. So on this
But don't we
on the
actually have the text at this point?
oh yes, we have the text, and it's incredible to claim, once you've read these texts, that he was just speculating about it, because he was adamantly and positively sure about it in the text. And one of the questions that was interesting was somebody asked him, "Well, did you lie in those texts?" And he couldn't answer yes or no.
That's
So
not a good sign.
he was probably the least credible witness I've ever seen on a witness stand, and he was the
And that's saying something.
and he's an attorney. So the latest development in this is that an assistant cop DA named Cindy Yeager has also offered to testify that what Wade told her was consistent with his text, and that she is also testifying that Fonnie Willis contacted Bradley directly. I mentioned cell phone data before. So there's two. Now this data has been proffered into the record. It's been offered if the judge needs more compelling information. He didn't need more to disqualify Nathan Wade, but he needs more to disqualify Fonnie Willis. So the defendant should have the right to put this data on. That probably will be decided during the appeal. But there's two companies that do this. CellHawk tracks geolocations, and then another organization was called CellBright, or software, provides the metadata of text. So what I mean by metadata is the time of the call, the length of it, from what point to what point, but not the actual content of the text.
Gotcha.
And And that cell phone data shows Wade going to Willis's residence before November 2021. And the data, I mean, there's over 2,000 voice calls and nearly 10,000 text messages before Fannie Willis ever hired him. So many of these communications were on nights and weekends, too. They're not necessarily during business hours.
So that seems to suggest a little bit more than just a professional relationship.
Exactly. And Fulton County, what's funny, Fulton County's district attorney's office now, they claim that this cell phone data is not reliable, but they actually use the same data for prosecutions.
Wow. A lot of mental gymnastics going on there.
Oh, yeah, throughout this whole thing. So then another point that the merchants brought up was that Wade had money in an undisclosed interest on lawyer's trust account, an IOLTA account. And that money, he withheld that from his law partnership, and that's what apparently caused the breakup of the partnership. His other partners felt that he was withholding money from them. And then Wade also didn't disclose the salary, the account and most of the salary in his divorce case. So he just claimed very little income. And Willis, to top it all off, filed a motion in the divorce case stating that Mrs. Wade was trying to embarrass and harass her by her subpoena. She tried to subpoena Fannie Willis. And that Willis claimed that it would interfere and obstruct in the conduct of the district attorney's election. And that was an unprecedented move as well by a district attorney. So
sordid.
Political gain.
Yeah.
Or not political gain, personal gain. So then there was the book deal. Willis consented to a book deal while this case was in progress. And the book deal is all about the case. So obviously that is for personal and political gain, which is a severe conflict of interest. And this book was released in January 2024 during the trial. And the author stated that Willis gave them exclusive access to thousands of secret documents, emails, text messages, and audio recordings about the case.
In other words, evidence.
Yes, all while the case is going on.
Wow.
Clearly a personal and political motivation there.
Right.
Then she also made this church speech.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
At Mount Bethel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Mount Bethel is downtown Atlanta church. It's Methodist church. And in doing that, basically tainted a future of Fulton County jury pool. So the case needs to be moved out of Fulton County now. But during this speech, she implied that the defendants were racist because they sought the disqualification of Wade, of a black man, and not Anna Cross, a white woman, or John Floyd, a white man. And they thought that she claimed that it was racist because Wade was black. You know, it wasn't because she was having an undisclosed affair with him and paid him $700,000, but she sure didn't pay the other two. So it's just absurd to play the race card there, but that's what she did.
Well, we just went through about 10 slides of impropriety, and she's claiming that that has nothing to do with the disqualification they were seeking.
It's all about race to her. And of course, that's what you have to do. If you're caught with your hand in the cookie jar,
right?
During the church service, she falsely said she had the right to hire these special prosecutors, which she didn't have the right unless she had approval. And she claimed that she paid them all the same. And as you could see from the records there, she didn't. That, you know, so that was just false information that she gave to the church congregation.
That's
Congregation.
demonstrably false.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, many of the people in the church probably believed her.
Right.
So she said during the speech she doesn't care about political parties and loves people of all political parties, despite the fact she had no explanation why she happened to have indicted 18 of her political adversaries on.
Right.
And then she began early and on by saying that she had impeccable credentials. So here's what these this lady with impeccable credentials did. She actually went to meet with Vice President Kamala Harris on February 28, 23, and Wade met with the Department of Justice on November 18, 2022, a couple of months, maybe 3 months before that. And Fannie Willis took Mayor Andre Dickens with her. You know, for reasons we don't know right now. But
So a couple of questions here. So what, this seems kind of unusual to me that Wade would meet with the Department of Justice and even that Willis would meet with the vice president with Kamala Harris. What business is that? I mean, I guess we obviously don't know what business they discussed, but this seems kind of odd to me.
well, right. I mean, it seems politically motivated because now
Right.
you've got the Biden DOJ and the vice president hooked into this false prosecution, or it's certainly at least dubious charges of her political adversary. So now it's a clear fingerprint of a political indictment.
And how about the mayor going along with Willis?
Yeah, don't know what that was all about. So just to sum up everything, Mike, there's all kinds of conflicts. And Harry McDougal, who's another attorney for Jeffrey Clark, whose trial actually started on Monday the 25th up in D.C., they're trying to disbar Clark for bizarre, crazy reasons. Harry laid out the conflicts, and this isn't exactly what he said, but I'm kind of paraphrasing here. There was a financial conflict because she took county prohibited gifts of more than $100 from Wade. There was a personal conflict she had because she provided exclusive access of case material to book authors for her own personal benefit. She had a conflict in duty because she failed to get approval to hire the special prosecutor, had a professional conflict because she made this highly publicized church speech that prejudiced the jury pool against the defendants. And she's got this whole conflict of integrity because she threatened the criminal prosecution of Mrs. Wade just to gain advantage for herself and Mr. Wade in a civil case. And that's a rules and professional conduct covers that. And then she's got the whole political conduct of indicting 18 of her political adversaries on dubious charges. So these are actual conflicts, not just appearance of conflicts.
It's hard
And
to
this,
imagine how she could have acted any more improperly.
you know, that is probably the best summary I've heard. How would you have been able to act more improperly than that? And why didn't the judge have enough courage to disqualify her? He simply did not have enough courage, and there's a couple of reasons for that. So now you've got the evidence of the DA office committing more improper actions. This is the entire DA office. Now we're beyond Fannie Willis, and we're beyond Nathan Wade. But the district attorney office, Dexter Bong, who signed Wade's invoices, refused to fulfill open records requests from Ashley Merchant when, and Merchant has had to file a lawsuit against Fulton County over this.
A blatant violation of the law.
Well, yeah, it is. And Fulton County is notorious for doing this and getting away with it or getting a hand slap. Nobody's really cracked down on them. Wade called a mutual friend of Terrence Brantley and to remind him to use the privilege argument. That was inappropriate. Another, Gabe Banks, a guy whose wife works for Willis, called Bradley before he testified. I mentioned that assistant Cobb DA Cindy Yeager now is offering to testify that she was present when Fonnie Willis called Bradley directly just before he testified.
Wow.
That's an extremely improper action. And then you've got 10 attorneys who falsely replied to the defendant's disqualification motion that there is, quote, no evidence D.A. Willis derived any financial benefit from Mr. Wade. That's absurd to say that there was no evidence because there's no evidence that she reimbursed him for the benefits she received.
Right.
And then that brings us to the other lead litigator who is still left on this case, and his name is Adam Abadi. And he tried to protect Willis by objecting to all of Merchant's questions of Bradley. And he said that he was using the attorney-client privilege grounds, but as a state attorney, they don't have any such privilege.
Right.
There's no such attorney-client privilege for the state. That's only for a witness and their attorney.
Right.
He and others were trying to protect Wade Willis and Bradley while they committed perjury on the stand, as the evidence seems to imply.
Right.
He argued that Ashley Merchant made false claims about her communications with Bradley, and she should be sanctioned. But her claims proved true to the court. So he ended up lying to the court. We counted 18 times in 8 minutes and when the trial opened.
Well, go big or go home, right?
Yeah, it was just, I think they were extremely nervous about what those texts were going to show. They didn't really know at that time. So we counted a total of 24 times in the first hour of the hearing. So there is a statute, 1518-27, which I think is he violated his oath of office, which, if true, would be a indictable offense. And that is, I think that he could possibly be vulnerable to litigation and prosecution under that statute. And just to sum up, I'll give you some of the lies that he told. There's just pages and pages of them. If you want to go through them, we can go. Do you want to go a little bit deeper, or you want to stop here?
Yeah, we can go. Yeah, we've spend a couple of minutes on that.
Okay. So he said, we've been able to determine the claims that defendants are making are legally meritless and factually unsupported that by the statements Mrs. Merchant made to the court. Well, they were actually had enough factual support to result in the disqualification of Nathan Wade and enough legal merit. He goes on to say that Mrs. Merchant's statement about what she was going to present before she presented it were patently false. And the court never said that. After hearing the statements and hearing the evidence, the court never concluded that they were patently false in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to say there were egregious misrepresentations of what Merchant thought Mr. Bradley was going to say. They proved out everything that she thought he was going to say he said in this text. They had He claimed that everything that Bradley would say would be protected under attorney-client privilege. That was not true. The judge found that he wasn't protected by attorney-client privilege. He claimed that Mr. Bradley represented that he had firsthand knowledge, and Ashley Merchant was claiming that. He said that her claim was patently false. The text clearly showed that he represented to her that he did have firsthand knowledge. So that proved to be false in court. Talked more about the misrepresentations of not being true. And turns out she represented everything she said was true. And then he claimed that, well, it was the purpose of harassment and undue burdens to the district attorney. That's why she was doing all this. Well, in reality, she was just defending her client. And it wasn't undue because, as you kind of indicated earlier, Mike, all of this was brought on by the inappropriate behavior of the DA. So right. It certainly wasn't undue. Then you've got this whole issue about he says that the defense counsel, that's Ashley Merchant, has a lack of candor. The court never questioned her candor after the evidence was presented. He said that she made, again, misrepresentations and flagrant falsehoods. And there were not even any falsehoods, much less flagrant falsehoods. Then, again, the whole firsthand evidence of Bradley having firsthand knowledge, he clearly attempted to pretend that he had no firsthand knowledge when he testified, but his text showed that he did have it. So, finally, Mrs. Merchant said that she had not spoken to Mr. Bradley. He claimed that Ashley Merchant never spoke to Mr. Bradley. Well, Bradley admitted under oath that he had talked with Ashley Merchant. So that was also a lie.
That's patently false.
Yeah, I mean, that you can't, how do you argue that one?
Right.
And he, you know, he said, and again, he had made the attorney-client privilege argument again. That was false. The court literally found that that was false. They said that Ashley was trying to create a spectacle and create harassment. In reality, she wasn't, you know, she was just simply trying to defend the client, her client. And all the evidence that was eventually found credible that she presented. And then finally, again, he wanted to call for sanctions because of the lack of duty of candor. And Mrs. Merchant was found to be truthful by the court in her claims. There's no time where the judge ever questioned her lack of candor. So the final things were that he tried to say that there was no good faith basis for doing what she did, and you know, well, for testifying, for calling Robin Yerty to testify, there was a good faith basis because Robin Yerty testified that their affair started long before that, eventually
right.
saying that she did in fact commit perjury indirectly,
right.
And so Robin Yerty's testimony was found to be correct, and you know, she certainly had a good faith basis because the court disqualified Nathan Wade from the case. So it was not a fishing expedition, as he claimed, because when the testimony, Robin Yerty testified for only about a half an hour, was right to the point, the questions were to the point, concisely crafted, and they were done very, very quickly. So it wasn't a blatant misuse of the process at all, as a body claimed. And there, and Mr. Wade now is under the court's decision to disqualify him, is now and allow an appeal on Ms. Willis, clearly shows there was not a blatant use of the process. So So all these claims that Abati has made is also true, and he's the top litigator that's left in this case. So that's some of the stuff that I wanted to share with you. I was a little bit long, but I think it's kind of an interesting track record that's almost beyond belief.
Well, I
Don't
think
you?
it's, I mean, that's it defies belief. That's exactly what it does. And I'm glad that you walked us through that information and the way you have it set up, because again, it's easy to spend, 2 or 3 minutes talking about it. Oh, Fannie Willis is corrupt. But when you actually walk through all of the evidence, it really kind of piles up. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. Have you?
No, I've never seen anything like the whole thing. I mean, the first, when we first came out, we saw the indictment, we called for impeachment because we thought it was the worst case of prosecutorial misconduct in American history. I mean,
I mean,
never had that.
she says in the indictment there's actually no evidence, but taken all together, it kind of, it show, well, however she worded it. I mean, I remember we spoke about it. It was really kind of bizarre, actually.
And the fact that she has spent hundreds of thousands, really millions of Fulton County taxpayer dollars on this is just, it's an affront to, people like me who live in Fulton County. I'm just really, I'm very disturbed by it, quite frankly.
What do you make of all the people who are testifying? Because from what I understand, there are a lot of whistleblowers who have come forward to testify against her. That says quite a bit about her, I think.
Well, when they first took over the office, they made everyone in the office reapply for their job. And Nathan Wade and Fannie Willis then interviewed them, mostly Nathan Wade, and decided whether or not they would be hired, essentially. So they started, they basically surrounded themselves with their own friends or people they could trust or count on,
Sycophants.
regardless of what their experience was.
Right. Now, I heard you say something months ago, and I find it to be rather prescient. You said that Fannie Willis is a blessing. Do you still feel that way? I imagine you
Well,
do.
it should be. I actually don't remember it quite saying that, but it could. It's a blessing to the Republican Party because it could, if they play their cards right in Georgia, it will unite the establishment and the grassroots together.
That's what you said, because you said that folks are either with us or they're with Fannie Willis. That's the distinction.
Yes. Now that if the Republicans play their cards right, they'll be united and they will take back Georgia if in fact they ever lost it in the first place. So that's, and there has been an impeachment motion filed, H.R. 972, filed by Representative Charlize Byrd, but that has not moved in the House. Primarily, there seems to be, again, a little bit of a cowardice to do anything about this. However, the Senate investigation is in full swing. So that should result in some interesting revelations.
I just find it ironic, and one of the things that I love about voter GA is that you remind us all the time this is not a partisan effort. This quest for election integrity has nothing to do with political affiliation. It's for everyone, because the vote is the most sacred thing that we have. It's really what sets us apart from citizens of any other nation in the world. But I find it ironic that the defendants in this case, in this indictment, are proven time and time again to be better than the folks who are bringing these charges against them. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, right, Mike, because the charges are so dubious to begin with. They're mostly is just an attack on free speech. If you look at all these things that the alleged acts of conspiracy, they are basically just acts of free speech. And you'll say, what is this in an indictment for? It doesn't make any sense. And you've got the whole phony fake elector thing, which was, alternate electors had been and always been legitimate since 1876 in the Tilden Rutherford B. Hayes matter. So that is all phony, as well as the, and proven to have been exercised as recently as 1960, 1960, 60. So it's absurd on its face. And the oath of office that a DA has to take here in Georgia is to improve. I mean, one of the most utmost things is impartiality. And how can any reasonable person look at this and believe that Fani Willis actually sincerely opened this investigation based on just pure impartiality? And she had no intention of indicting 18 of her political adversaries. I mean, who could possibly believe that garbage?
That is such a great point, right? We all have that image in our minds of Lady Justice holding the scales, and she's blindfolded. Yeah, and if you're trying to convince me that Fannie Willis is blindfolded in this case, you're going to be trying for a long time. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I feel the same way.
Well, Garland, you know how much we admire you and admire the work your organization is doing, Voter GA. We thank you for all the time that you spend with us. And thank you for the work that you're doing. I want you to tell the folks where they can find you and where they can support Voter GA, because you've been doing this for a long time and you guys are doing great work, and you show no signs of letting up.
No, we can't let up now. It's just we're getting too close to the big day and how important this whole country, this whole election will be to the future of the country, as you said earlier. So it's Voter GA. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. This is all about election integrity. And remember, Fani Willis has started this as an election investigation. And basically, it's turned out to be shutting down opposition to election. Anytime you question an election, that it should be certainly legitimate, but she's trying to shut down all questioning of all elections, which is a threat to election integrity and security, not only in Georgia, but across America. So I consider that to be a threat. But bottom line is that we are nonpartisan, nonprofit, and VoterGA.org has a wealth of information up there. We have one or two presentations about Fani, as well as what's happening nationally in the other cases. And of course, everything else is all election related. And we are volunteers. We don't take a salary. It's an all volunteer organization. So it's amazing that we've been able to put all this together with volunteers. And we'll be able to keep doing that because we have a great, great staff of people behind us. I'm just the face of the organization.
Well, you guys are doing great, great work. You know how big of a fan I am of you guys. So thank you once again for taking the time. Please come back real soon.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.